Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Joining us now, Ryan Anderson. He's a senior research fellow for religion and civil society at the Heritage Foundation. He's also the author of the new book, When Harry Became Sally, Responding to the Transgender Moment. Ryan, thanks so much for joining us on Mornings on the Mall.
Sure thing. Happy to be with you.
Really glad to have you. Let me start with asking this. Is the transgender debate settled? Because it feels like no matter where you go in media, it seems like it's over. You've just got to use whatever pronouns people tell you to use, and that's it. Any other questions? You're persona non grata.
Perhaps at the elite level, right? So perhaps the mainstream media, college campuses, Hollywood movie studios. But ordinary Americans, this debate's anything but settled. Ordinary Americans... parents don't want their 5-year-old son coming home and saying, I'm actually a girl, and asking them to put that 5-year-old boy on puberty-blocking drugs or on estrogen. Ordinary parents don't want their daughters coming home from school and saying, there's a boy in my bathroom, there's a boy in my locker room, because that boy identifies as a girl. So what you see is a divide between kind of elite opinion and then ordinary Americans who think something's going on, that we need to kind of slow down and examine what's going on.
Ryan, it seems like it's in some cases that control of this is being wrested from the parents entirely, and as in, like, children can make these decisions on their own. Their parents' input hardly matters, and in fact, their parents are compelled to go along with whatever it is their kids decide for themselves here. Is that the case?
Unfortunately, increasingly the answer is yes. One of the things that I document in the book is that there's an entire chapter of one of these handbooks for schools on how to deal with students who identify as transgender about what to do with, quote, uncooperative parents. And they say that all of the privacy interests are protecting the privacy of the student from their parents finding out that they're transitioning at school. And so they actually have a checklist on how to allow a student to transition at school without the parents or the legal guardians knowing what's going on.
All right, so I have to ask, we can't give our children an aspirin in school, yet they can take drugs to transform from a boy to a girl or vice versa.
Well, the drug part would require consent of the parent,
okay,
or the guardian, or whoever now has become a court-appointed guardian of the child. But the social transition need not require parental consent. So what I'm describing here is that students as young as 5 years old could be going to school as a boy, going to the principal's office, and putting on a new outfit. And then for the rest of the day, be wearing a dress and being referred to by a female name and female pronouns, going back to the principal's office, changing back into their boy clothes, and then going home. And their parents have no idea what's going on.
Can we say something? What about maybe a push towards saying there, we need age-appropriate rules? You know, the big gun debate right now, saying, well, maybe we should prevent anyone under the age of 21 from being able to buy a gun. Why can't we say that there's certain age-appropriate points at which you can make a decision? For instance, 5-year-olds shouldn't be allowed to decide pretty much anymore whether they want to wear the red shirt or the blue shirt. That's pretty much as far as 5-year-old decision-making should go.
And that sounds entirely reasonable and rational, and it's being rejected.
Well, because it's reasonable and rational.
It's really remarkable. I mean, when I was doing research for this book, I came across some of the official statements being made by various LGBT groups. And they say that just because a child is young or has developmental disabilities doesn't make their gender identity any less valid than an adult's gender identity. Mm-hmm. And we have to respect the gender identity of the child. Even a developmentally disabled child. And it's turning things upside down. Normally what we try to do with children in particular, and what the best medicine suggests here, is give them time to grow out of it. 80 to 95% of children that have gender dysphoria will naturally grow out of it, will come to identify with their body if development isn't inhibited. If they're allowed the time and the space to develop, they'll come to identify with their bodies.
So what you're saying is don't make a drastic decision if you're just going to change your mind in the future and really regret the decision you made?
And the chapter on people who made that decision and then later in life regretted it is heartbreaking. It was the most difficult chapter for me to research, listening to people's testimonies on YouTube, reading their blogs, people who transitioned in high school and then 5, 10, 15 years later regretted it and attempted to detransition.
What happens to people like that who voice their opinion in our media space? Are they, I mean, one, it just seems like they're kind of ignored. Is there something more pernicious going on in terms of the way they're treated for recanting their desire to be transgender?
They're ignored by the mainstream media, and then they're attacked by many of the LGBT and left-leaning media outlets as never having really been trans in the first place or being a self-loathing transgender person. Because their narrative doesn't fit the narrative that kind of mainstream media and official LGBT organizations want to promote, they're either ignored or they're ostracized.
Now, what is your view on transgender troops, trans adults who have chosen to make this transition while serving in the military?
It strikes me that transgender identities, in many respects, are incompatible with military realities, just in terms of deployability. If you need to be seeing an endocrinologist on a regular basis to be receiving hormone treatments for the opposite sex because you have removed your bodily organs that produce these hormones and now you need to see an endocrinologist to receive hormone therapy, that's going to be incompatible with deployability. We don't let people serve in the military if they have asthma. And so it's not clear to me how we could allow people to serve in the military when they need to be seeing a hormone doctor on a regular basis. It also strikes me that there are all sorts of concerns when it comes to the privacy at the barracks and things like this. If you have a man who identifies as a woman, where's that individual housed? The individual is not going to want to be housed with other men, and the female troops probably aren't going to want him housed with them. And so there are just realities about military service that seem incompatible with transgender identities. But we're going to have to see what the Trump administration decides to do on this and how they try to work it out.
You know, as you engage in all of this, I imagine there's a lot of people that are not happy with you exploring these types of questions because, one, they're kind of uncomfortable, but, two, it definitely does not hew to, like, the cultural line on this. How do you kind of comport yourself when you handle this? And in the event that you do speak to transgender people, are you kind of subscribing to their pronoun theories, trying to, you know, get along? You know, how do you view this on a personal level?
Yeah, I mean, I think the most important thing on an individual kind of personal level is that you want to maintain long-term relationship. Because no one encounter with an individual are you going to be able to persuade them of your viewpoint. And so especially if you have a family member or a friend who's suffering from gender dysphoria, the most important thing is to maintain the relationship. And so that might require saying, look, you know I don't actually think that you can reassign your sex, but for the sake of our relationship, I'll call you by your new name.
Yeah.
But I want to let you know that I don't think this is good for you.
I don't think you're alone. I think a lot of people kind of assess it that way. Ryan Anderson, he's a senior research fellow at the Heritage Foundation, and he's the author of the new book, When Harry Became Sally, Responding to the Transgender Moment. Ryan, thank you.
Thank you.